You're listening to the Healthcare Goes Digital podcast. Get ready to be inspired as we explore provocative topics surrounding innovative technologies and ideas with top industry professionals as we help to positively disrupt healthcare. At Impetus Digital, we believe that everything starts with a thought as we aspire to act as the bridge to ignite these courageous conversations, both through our Insight platform and through these fireside chats. Let's get started with your host, Natalie Eden, Managing Director and co-owner of Impetus Digital, an all-in-one virtual collaboration solution for online meetings, events, and advisory boards.
Sure. So welcome, everybody. My name is Natalie Yeadon, and I'm one of the co-owners and managing directors with Impetus Digital. And for those of you who do not know what Impetus Digital is we have built some of the best-in-class asynchronous and synchronous virtual collaboration tools. And we help life science companies, healthcare companies, pharmaceutical companies help to virtualize their investigator meetings, advisory board meetings, co-author working groups, and of recent, a lot of internal meetings, POA brand rollouts. So we've really been there for people, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. But what we really believe at Impetus is that everything starts with a thought. Everything starts with a courageous conversation. And that's actually the onus or the impetus, no pun intended, about why we started this fireside chat, so that we can talk to some of the more daring, avant-garde, provocateurs, people who are doing something truly new and innovative, to start some of these hairy, audacious conversations with people like Jeff Ruby from Newtopia. So we want to get started with some of these discussions. I'm so pleased to have Jeff on the line with us. He is a phenomenal entrepreneur, so proud as well that he is a Canadian, a fellow Torontonian, a health innovator, and a global thought leader. He really believes in what we're going to talk about today, which is hyper-personalized medicine and preventative medicine, and highly engaging strategies to deliver proven, scalable, and really sustainable, that's the key, sustainable habit changes for disease prevention. So this is really going to be some interesting stuff that we're going to dig in today. He is actually the founder and CEO of Newtopia. This is actually a personal, it's a personalized healthcare company that works with organizations, employers, and employees themselves to deliver highly or uber personalized and target disease prevention habits or habit formation strategies so that employers can actually reduce their costs. So it's a very interesting model, and I want to dig into this because Jeff has this really, really neat route to where he got here. So first of all, thank you so much, Jeff, for being in this fireside chat. Really pleased to have you here.
Oh, Natalie, thanks. What an amazing introduction. Thanks. I don't often get that kind of build up at the beginning. So thanks very much. It's really great to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
No, it's super, super cool. And for those of you who are listening, Jeff has a lot of other really great pearls of wisdom and nuggets and all kinds of videos out there. And I really feel like I know him, and I'm so proud of what he's done as a fellow Canadian as well. So let's actually get started, Jeff, on your route. You are another fellow company operator. We were having a little earlier discussion on that, but it wasn't an easy route getting to where you are. You started off in the legal field. And so I must start and ask the question, how on earth did a lawyer ever get into healthcare in the first place? Like, what brought you here?
I would consider myself an incredibly accidental health innovator in that I didn't I didn't start my career with the traditional life sciences or health sciences background. I did a JD MBA and thought I wanted to be a corporate lawyer. I had a number of family members in the profession and thought that was where I should be following. And as I became one, I just realized that the vocational fit wasn't right for me. It felt like I was in the wrong place entirely. And I had this odd week in my life when on a Monday, I walked in to the corporate firm I was working at and resigned to find something to do. And 3 days later, something to do found me. It was a call from my dad, who'd been diagnosed with abdominal cancer at the time at a fairly young age. And in this weird week, a few things. Now my career was up in the air and now my family's health was up in the air. But for me, it was the first time that I had a real occasion to take a look at what I now call our sick care system. Prior to that, I just had no reason to look at it. And it was really through my dad's experience that I came to this somewhat sickening realization that what we call healthcare has very little to do with keeping healthy people healthy and has much more to do with monetizing and taking care of illness. And I was just struck by that. And it started, led to a bit of a scratch that I've now been itching for 20 years across, you know, four different startups.
And you didn't just get into Notopia. I mean, there's a little bit of a voyage here. And one of the things I thought was really interesting as a common theme in your life, Jeff, is really about the serendipitous moments that have oftentimes touched you on the shoulder. I was actually just curious if there's some sort of a spiritual dimension to any of this, especially with the name Newtopia. I'm just curious, or is it you're just one of these people that just happen to be in the right place at the right time?
Yeah, I mean, the naming of Newtopia is somewhat interesting. I'm happy to share it with you. I haven't shared it terribly publicly and too often, but we can go there. To the broader question is, I think I'm a really purpose, you know, mission-driven individual that wants to, really add something and help my fellow human beings. And most importantly, also what I'm trying to build is something that had my dad had it, I still think he'd be here and answer some questions that I had while he was going through his experience that I had no idea about. And so I think there's a bit of selfishness in terms of wanting to give back both to my father, figure out answers for me. But now that I figured it out, I feel this real sense of duty and obligation to now be able to provide those insights. And most importantly, this habit change platform to the millions of individuals around the world who either don't have a clue or really just lack the inspiration and the guidance and the support and inspiration to take actions to change their habits to stay healthy every day. And so that's what's been driving me. That's what's inside and wakes me up in the, every morning excited about what I do.
When you actually first got started, I know that you had started with the Cleveland Clinic and you brought that into Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about that serendipitous story of how, your first foray, if you will, into the medical space and how that just sort of came into your life?
Well, so interestingly, that actually was my third foray. Almost to back it up, not long after my father was diagnosed and we had this really interesting appointment at a major cancer specialty hospital here in Toronto called Princess Margaret. And my dad's first question was, doc, how did I get this? And the physician came back with, Mr. Ruby, a lot of this has to do with some unlucky genes and your lifestyle choices, which in that moment, Natalie, I have to admit, I really had no idea what he was talking about. I didn't understand that genes and lifestyle could equal cancer. That wasn't part of my business and law training, but I certainly understand what he was talking about now, but I had this horrible sinking feeling that if my dad doesn't know and he's in trouble and I don't know and could be sitting here, I bet you most of us have no idea what this confluence of genes and lifestyle is all about. So shortly after that, I actually had this interesting opportunity to meet with and partner up with some scientists at the University of Toronto who were trying to commercialize a genetic diagnostic platform. Again, with no background, I just understood the genetics were there and it seemed like an amazing opportunity to learn about that side and that dynamic. And so I became a co-founder in this genetic diagnostics platform. We were about 10 years too early to any personal genetic testing, which I didn't have an awareness about. And also as my dad got more and more ill and unfortunately passed away 3 years later, I wanted to be closer to cancer. And so I left and joined a group of physicians and surgeons who were trying to bring together the best of preventive advice with the best of gold standard diagnostics. And so this was an amazing opportunity now to really give back there. The company was called Life Screening Centers, and the focus was on colorectal, breast, and prostate cancer prevention. And we were seeing this really interesting hybrid of what was publicly offered versus what's privately paid for. And I started to really experiment with what I call the holy trinity of lifestyle, which is nutrition, exercise, and mental and behavioral health. And at a time when we were looking to expand that outside of just Ontario, I had a chance meeting with the international development team at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation and Canyon Ranch, who had partnered in the US around the best of health and wellness model. And we're looking to attract Canadians to it. And actually the meeting was all about, would Canadians buy insurance products to potentially use these US facilities? And I scoffed and said, oh no, if you want to attract Canadians, you have to be Canadian and lay down roots here. And that's where the concept and ultimately the business model for Cleveland Clinic Canada, which was their first international subsidiary, was born. So you're right, in some ways, each has led to the next. I never intended to be serial in this space. Quite frankly, never even thought I'd be in this space. But Newtopia really reflects the lessons learned of the past three in by far the most scalable of anything that I've done. And it's been a 20-year journey, and which continues.
Yeah, so I do find that a very intriguing. You've always just been in the right place at the right time for these opportunities for you to sort of dig in, linger, learn the lessons, and then move on. So I do find that that's been a really interesting common theme in your personal life and the building out of Newtopia. So mm-hmm. I'm sure there was a lot of great things and relationships that you were able to navigate and learn about the US healthcare system, bringing that into Canada and seeing about the merging and melding. So maybe we can actually talk about the very early iteration of Newtopia, because I think that you continue to mention in a lot of your talks about how your current organization has pivoted probably about 5 or 6 times over the last several years. But in the very first iteration, what did Newtopia look like? And what was it that you were creating at that time?
In many ways, I had been trying to gather the lessons learned from the prior three, and it was heavily informed by the lessons from the Cleveland Clinic and Canyon Ranch. And we started really by trying to take that best-in-class integrative approach, but to deliver it direct to consumer to the mass market for the first time, and really with this focus on disease prevention. And so we spent the first 3 years of our life really experimenting with that direct to consumer. And the major lesson learned were really twofold. One is that individuals really don't invest in disease prevention for themselves. The idea of spending dollars today on preventing type 2 diabetes or heart disease or cancer or a stroke, while you know those are all important things and no one wants to get them, but it doesn't have that immediate gratification that is required for consumer spend. And so what we were actually forced to become is much more of an aesthetic weight loss company, which was short term, let's get into a photo or a bathing suit or right here and now. And then the participants or clients want to forget we ever existed. And that's not it's not entirely what we wanted to be at all. And then the second major lesson was to do that, you require a really big consumer brand that's aspirational, and it requires competing against the likes of Weight Watchers, which is now WW, or the Jenny Craigs or the other commercial brands of the world. And as a startup company, building such a brand was just not in the cards. And so those two lessons, really drove the, and some wonderful advice from great board members and mentors drove the movement toward an enterprise version of that. We spent a year in Canada actually learning that this was the wrong market. I'm happy to talk more about that. And then we decided that we'd be far better suited to the US and really set our sights from 2012 onward on both proving and now commercially executing in the US.
So I'm going to want to linger on that in a little bit, but I just want to sort of start off on the tenets of the core pillars behind this fairly, it's a simple but complex product and service that you're bringing to the table. And there's a lots of different pieces. The first one, and I think at the end of the day, when you actually describe Newtopia, you always have the patient at the center. So it's got a very patient-centric view. But you also really paint the picture on the uber personalized perspective of healthcare prevention for that patient. And the first piece to this, which brings that back to your earlier U of T connection partnership days, is that proprietary genetic testing. We hear this all the time with 23andMe and this company and that company, and there's, left, right, and center. But tell us a little bit about that genetic test, because I know sometimes people ask me, well, are you testing for hypertension or are you testing for diabetes? But you have a very specific test and how it fits into the overall Newtopia service and product. Can you tell us a little bit about the actual genetic component of this?
Yeah, sure. And I just want to make sure it gets framed right, because I also, it would be totally incorrect to consider Newtopia as a genetic testing company, right? The genetic, right? It's a component of what we do, but you know, ultimately, as a tech-enabled habit change platform, you know, our job is really to do two things. Our focus is on pre-chronic populations, and what we want to do is get to know those individuals really, really well through a combination of genetic, behavioral, and social data, so we can turn around and design experiences that combine the best of human with the best of digital to, fundamentally execute a habit change approach where we can lower the risks, prevent those conditions, and then in partnership with whoever's risk bearing, you know, our partners, our risk bearing employers or insurers, so that we can create healthier members, but also lower their costs in a meaningful way, all most importantly, while delivering outcomes that grow. So we want to see the benefit of those outcomes improve over time. I just set all that up because you really need to understand and see the genetics within the context of that habit change, the getting to know someone, whereby we saw early on a real power in genetics, not so much as a diagnostic tool, which is, if you strip out ancestry, what most genetic testing is being used for today, but rather we saw that there was a power on the engagement side, which is ultimately, how do we get greater buy-in? All right, there isn't a person we have spoken to or have met over the tens of thousands of participants that we've had and continue to have that don't know that they should probably eat better, exercise more, and or sleep and reduce their stress. I mean, those comments have almost become sort of like the mother's milk. It's like it's almost cliche, but yet the vast majority of us don't do that. And so I've been fascinated by the why. And I've also been really fascinated by, so what gets inside of us that can change that? And I've found that genetic engagement is really powerful because what we're trying to do is answer two fundamental questions. The first is, has that individual at risk inherited any factors from mom and dad that could be impacting their weight and lifestyle, namely so they can stop blaming themselves? Because at the root of that blame, Natalie, is this giant confidence issue and this belief in themselves. And if people don't believe in themselves, there's no way to build confidence. And if you can't build confidence, there's no way to change habits. And so we needed a front door, and the genetic answer to that first question was really powerful as this aha moment. And it also leads directly into the next question we want to answer, which is, how can we arm that individual with a greater sense of control over what to do about it? Effectively, can we use the genetic insights to shape at a macro level within evidence and guidelines the very recommendations we provide across nutrition, across exercise, and across mental and behavioral health? And so it's that aha moment that, oh, you mean this isn't my fault? Quite frankly, more that maybe they can blame their parents on, which is a whole other issue, but just it's not their fault. And two, now I know exactly what I should be doing to overcome it. Serves as this incredibly powerful spark and sort of route to get buy-in. And that's really what we're using it for. And it's one of a number of tools. And so it's not a magic bullet. It also, I don't believe today, can provide sort of real micro details, but at a macro, almost informing those two answers, it's incredibly powerful and one of the keys to our success.
No, it sounds really brilliant. And one of the things I think is very important to denote here is not that it's acting like a placebo, but in some ways the genetics are a bit of a hook. And I know that you actually spoke about this otherwise, that sometimes people think that, you know, the other way around this is around education. And I know that you said that some organizations and the way that they're looking at chronic disease management is sorely missing the point that it's just about education. But the interesting question to you is there some sort of a hybrid in between? Part of it is being able to allow one to blame oneself outside of oneself, so i.e. the genetics. But is there something to also be said about all of the myriad of work that's going on around cognitive science, neuroscience, the way the brain works, and educating people to realize that not only do they not need to blame themselves because of their genetics, but they also don't need to blame themselves because of the way their brain is wired and the way habits are created innately. You know, we hear about, you know, the Atomic Habits by James Clear, which is a simple book, to something that's as complex as Hebbian law, to the way neural networks are built, and on it goes. Where does that piece play into your program?
It's so fundamental to our thinking, this this approach of one size fits one as opposed to one size fits all. And I would say that, you know, most of the efforts at disease prevention today are largely built and based on the way we've all gone to school, which makes sense, by the way. It's sort of, it's a known framework. And so in the case of type 2 diabetes, which is probably the largest preventive effort, certainly in the U.S., today, right now, and codified in something the CDC created, which is the traditional diabetes prevention program, it's built much the way we've gone to school, which is, you know, some government agency, aka professor, creates a curriculum and attracts students to it, either in person or more and more these days online. There's an instructor trained and chosen to teach that curriculum to everyone. There's some group dynamics maybe to help build that knowledge. And at the end of, you know, roughly 4 months, the hope is that the students have learned the information and then are able to, in this case, translate that to changes in behavior. And so I kind of just challenge you and anyone who's listening, just name one course you've ever taken in your life that not only made you smarter, but changed the course of every activity you do on a daily basis. And if you can't think of one, it's probably because you never took one, but I actually don't think that's what that course was designed to do. But yet that method is the underpinning of how roughly 100 million people in the US today are supposed to prevent type 2 diabetes. And we think it's going to epically fail, not because there's anything wrong with education, but because a very different school is required. One that puts the student right at the center and takes the time to get to know that student really well, again, through a combination of social, genetic, and behavioral data, but then leverage that knowledge to create unique experiences specifically for that student, both, you know, what's the right content for that student? How should that student be provided that content? Who should lead it? How do you gamify it? How do you make it social? Except the very nature of this school isn't actually about building knowledge. It's about building confidence and incrementally changing the habits of the student so they become the engine of their own growth over time. And now that is very much what Newtopia is founded on. It doesn't have a lot of likeness elsewhere. And so oftentimes it's easier to posit that against what exists, but that hyper-personalization, that truly individualized one size fits one, is what we deliver. And the goal is not just to be contrarian, it's because that is the underpinning of how to change habits and ultimately deliver outcomes that are not only significant, but more importantly, that grow over time. And it's the growth over time, which is so fundamental, and is oftentimes so lacking in the health space. Because oftentimes the one size fits one learning education is really just based on memorizing, rote memory, and willpower. And any of us who've tried a diet before or have willed our way there may be able to achieve short-term outcomes, but long-term growing outcomes are fleeting. And so a really different school of thought's required. And that's very much the approach that we're following and taking.
I absolutely love it and completely concur. And, you know, there's tons and tons of research and books and, you know, Charles Duhigg's book on, you know, the power of habit and all sorts of other things, like current research that really speaks and upholds the philosophy behind Newtopia. Now, the other core component, which also brings the uber personalization of your program and services, is the psychosocial analysis that goes on with the people that come into the program to understand who they are, how they think, so that they can actually get properly matched to what you guys call an inspirator. Right, okay, it's not too much like respirator, but yes, maybe they can get respirated by them too, but an inspirator or a coach who has, you know, again, a similar personality style to inspire the person to continue in their sustained ways in, I guess, the immediate way, which is around weight loss, which obviously has lots of downward repercussions. But Can you talk to about that key pillar around the psychosocial component?
I mean, ultimately, I'd say this whole getting to know each individual at risk, each of those pillars are important. The getting to know socially, so what's driving there is, you know, who is this individual? Where is he or she from? What's their family and community like? Ultimately, we're trying to really understand the social determinant data so that we're not making assumptions and that we truly understand where this person comes from and their understanding and their thoughts and beliefs. And then we also want to understand the individual behaviorally, things like personality type, motivation type, and readiness to change. Because if we're doing our job right, we're truly meeting each individual where they are, right? We're not trying to bring the individual to our content and to our curriculum, but it's actually, how do we bring ourselves to them? And in doing so, the goal here is we then, based on that understanding, want to design these experiences that are going to be meaningful to change habits. And as you pointed, one of those key components is the best of human. And it has to work really well alongside the best of digital and the best of tech, right? To make this scale, you've got to have both working together. But we're fundamental believers that people respond to people. We're social creatures. It's why we're having such a, you know, this impact of COVID-19 has been so dramatic, because it's impacted the very fabric of what makes us human is what makes us social. But this idea of matching is really important, because the catalyst for that habit change, that the key individual is going to meet the participant where he or she is going to be one of our inspirators. And we're using behavior science, much like a Match.com or an eHarmony, except we're not trying to find a romantic partner. We're trying to find the best member of our team who's going to be able to catalyze and inspire that habit change across nutrition, exercise, behavioral, and mental health for each participant. And so it's really fundamental. And then from there, we want to make sure that there's just great technology available to connect them. So whether it's starting by video, we often start the way you and I are having a conversation today in this telehealth enabled platform, but it can evolve to text or email or phone or any way really that the participant and inspirator like to communicate. We're not trying to force any modality. But that human connection is really important. And it's really important because alongside of it, we want great, easy-to-use tech, mobile-first, that connects the right, you know, easy-to-use technology with convenience, but also the right wearable and wireless sensors, the right gaming environment, the right social community. And it's where the two fit together, and we're able to honor the relationship that's built to really deliver the right amount of human alongside the right amount of digital over the course of the relationship. That's where the magic of Newtopia and our technology platform really happens.
So tell us a little bit about the technology piece of this. So you've brought the human elements and the Uber personalization components, and there's a lot of dynamics, and they're all, like you said, connecting via this online tool. So is this a proprietary tool that has been built? And it sounds like you're also allowing, with, again, the patient being at the center of all of it, allowing for all of these different on-ramps and off-ramps from the patient. And what is the interoperability? Who has access to this information? Who is monitoring this information? Is it just the patient? Is it just the person that's their inspirator? Is it an allocated physician or other allied healthcare providers that they've given permission to look at this? And also, is it the social community that you're allowing them to access? So tell us a little bit about interoperability and access to this data.
So the leverage, if you will, of the Newtopia platform is this persuasive technology platform that we've built, which is fundamentally bringing the right behavioral economics and psychology alongside, you know, more and more machine learning, AI, and smart automation, and the right technology user experience and design to deliver that habit change at scale. And so it's been built by Newtopia, and it both powers our inspirators. They've got a very powerful information center and dashboard to understand all those dynamics about each individual. And then there's actually a full rules engine and there's the opportunity for Newtopia itself to deliver content based on the evolving relationship with each participant. The data, so we focus on the US, we're a HIPAA compliant organization. So all of the data is subject to the appropriate BAA agreements with our clients. And the ownership of data is very much the participants. They own the data. We have consent rights and interest in anonymized, de-identified data, which we are able to conduct research on, both at the genomic and lifestyle or phenotypic level. But the data sharing is actually really simple. We don't share data with anyone on an identified basis. And both because we deal in genetic data and the presence of very strong Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, or GINA laws, in the US, which, by the way, have just been approved by the Supreme Court here in Canada, which is a wonderful thing. We're finally joining the G7 in finally having appropriate GINA laws, which should usher in, hopefully, a next generation of prevention and precision health here in Canada as well. But the information is strictly between each participant and Newtopia, and it's up to the participant to determine if he or she wants to disclose that information with their physician or healthcare team as they wish.
Yep, beautiful thing. So it sounds like you're starting to integrate some really high-tech elements. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit, and again, not going into proprietary things, around, we hear a lot these days about neural networks and machine learning and some of these dynamics and these elements getting smarter over time. The more a patient uses this, the smarter it gets and more personalized it becomes. Can you speak a little bit to how some of these dynamics are working in favor of the patient's use of the Newtopia platform?
Yeah, and so Natalie, one thing I would also say is we, just because we're dealing, we're working with individuals who are pre-diagnosed, we typically steer away from patients and really just go with individual or participant. Okay. But for the sake of the participants that we're working with, there's an awful lot that's happening. We are blessed with an enormous amount of data, and we're blessed with a really phenomenal both data science and AI machine learning team here who are leveraging it, but not just for the buzzworthy sake of saying we have it. The whole goal here is we're trying to really create meaningful experiences for our participants between insights we can offer to each inspirator, timing, context, when they should reach out, when they shouldn't, as we're watching the metadata of, we have wireless devices, we have a cellular smart scale, we have activity trackers, we have community dynamics and gaming dynamics. As we're watching those, we're using more and more insights from machine learning today to inform both the inspirators, what they should be watching out for, and also to guide each of the participants through more and more nudges, more and more contextual communications with our participants. And so I would say it's totally behind the scenes. It would not be evidence at all to a Newtopia participant that this is going on, but there's a massive amount of both neural network learning and machine learning that we are taking advantage of to really enhance the experience that appears to be coming through experiences with a participant's inspirator and experiences with the Newtopia app we've created for them.
So we're just going to sort of take a step back and see that you originally started this in something where you could get some immediate utilization, and that's really on what could the non-delayed gratification, which has to do with like weight management. But I think really ultimately you realize that there is long-term ramifications of weight loss associated with some of the more chronic health conditions, be it hypertension, heart attacks, heart failure, diabetes, cancer, and amidst other sort of autoimmune diseases. So there's long-term ramifications possibly. But you started off with weight loss. Can you speak a little bit about some of the clinical studies that you have forged ahead with? And I know you did one recently with Aetna. Tell us a little bit about what that study looked like and some of the key results that came from that key clinical trial.
I mean, I would say the ability, so our ability to realize that as a direct-to-consumer company, we were going to be forced to be an aesthetic weight loss company, which, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that, but our interest was in actually having an impact across the major metabolic risk factors that underlie chronic disease. So we wanted to have impacts across waist circumference or BMI, blood pressure, blood glucose, triglycerides, or cholesterol. In order to get at that, we had to really figure out both the clinical ability to lower those risk factors and also get the economics right on who would be interesting. And our work with Aetna was really central to that because we came out of our experience direct to consumer realizing that wasn't going to work, our experience working with Canadian employers and insurers really realizing that wasn't going to work. And we in some way serendipitously bumped into Aetna at a time that they had invested in a big data tool to identify a pre-chronic or metabolic syndrome risk amongst their 40 million members. And they're next going to the next question, which was, what's the leading platform to mitigate that risk, to actually change the behavior and lower it? And unbeknownst to us, we were having a conversation in the midst of a global market search for the leading platform. And it was unbeknownst to us because we just thought we were having some conversations, and we ended up being chosen as that leading opportunity. But that led to the proof. And the proof was embarking on a large-scale randomized control trial over 3 years. For a young startup at the time, that was a pretty heady both opportunity, but a bit of a bet your company risk that we took, because we effectively just did everything to focus our efforts for 3 years on that trial. We wanted gold standard evidence. It ended up paying off incredibly well. And so, Aetna took 2,835 of their own at-risk employees, 1,890 were our participant group, 945 were control group, all randomized. It was managed by an internal division called Aetna Innovations, which unfortunately no longer exists. We were incredibly lucky to be able to spend 3 full years with them. And they brought to bear some leading researchers and scientists and statisticians in this field who were very interested in seeing our results and publishing before they would commit to any commercial obligations. And so what we were able to publish is that, at the end of 12 months, Aetna saw a US $1,464 savings in paid medical costs, largely because 76% of all the participants that started Newtopia lost an average of 4.3% of their body weight, just shy of 5% at the end of 12 months. And that had a corresponding impact where all 5 metabolic risks, waist circumference, blood pressure, blood glucose, triglycerides, cholesterol, all improved. And so it's the improvements in those risks that drove the cost savings. And so I would argue that Newtopia is not a pure play weight loss company for the sake of weight loss. While that's a really important, it's a really important proxy to improving those 5 metabolic risks, which are at the heart of chronic disease management or prevention. And so that's what we're going after. And at 12 months at that publishing, we had now published as good or better any clinical data that had been peer reviewed in the disease prevention field. But it's actually what we did at the end of 24 months that I'm far more proud of, because we're interested in outcomes that grow. Again, it's the short term, while important, isn't so hard to achieve. Willpower can get there every day, but seeing them stick and grow is what's most important. And what we saw in the study is 90% of our participants continued that risk reduction. So the average body weight moved from 4.3% or 10 pounds at the end of 12 months to 22 pounds or just over 10%. And the over doubling is really significant because it means that each participant's actually getting better. Their habits are changing. They're becoming their own engine of growth. But it means that 2x in-year return on investment that we published and delivered for Aetna actually turned into 4x ROX. So it doubled as well. So literally everybody improved. It was just win, win, win. And when we were able to put all those pieces together and realize the power of that, that's when we knew we were onto something really powerful and figured out the right commercialization step for that as well.
I think this is fantastic. And I think, you've been very open with the study results and the fact that they are a selected group of people. These are people who are at risk for things like metabolic syndrome, which is really important to call out because then they're a very specific group of people. So where that calls out, and also the fact that it may, you know, this is a really potentially good add-on. It doesn't necessarily mean people are going to go off their glucose meters or their Fitbits or their medications because you didn't really study individuals and what other programs they're participating. So this is a wonderful addition. I think what's also going to be really good to discuss a little bit here is the business model. And I think it's also a really enjoyable excursion with you to find out about the various ways you tried, tested, and these quick pivots of starting in some different markets and assessing, you know, everything from, you know, people who are not motivated, you know, the direct to consumer, to working in Canada where people are just not financially motivated at the employer, you know, insurer level, to working with Aetna and leveraging their salespeople who really only wanted to get in front of people, new tools that they had, and they really didn't care if they used Newtopia or not, to finally building your own sales team. Tell us a little bit about the thinking, the things that you try that didn't quite work to get you to the current business model that you're leveraging today.
Yeah, I appreciate the summary. You just summarized years, and yeah, you know, I like to say I've written a book. It's called A Checkbook on How Not to Do This. But in many ways, there's been, you know, massive learning. So, you know, here we are at the end of the randomized control trial where we reached this sort of pinnacle of understanding, and you know, there was a distribution challenge and a sales model and a business model challenge. On the distribution side, just to start, you're right. We had started out in our commercial efforts, you know, really heavily relying on a distributed sales approach, meaning, you know, Aetna was a credibility marker, and they were interested in commercializing Newtopia through their national account sales team, which at the time sounded like the best thing ever. You've got over 400 individuals who are selling to some of the largest, most sophisticated organizations out there. And so we jumped in with 2 feet to support those efforts. And we had, you know, great lessons. One is that, you know, we adore the relationship with Aetna, which is actually now CVS, who's acquired them in Aetna, who remain a partner of ours as we've expanded into the CVS population. But having a distributed sales team selling for us came with all kinds of, you know, of nuances and challenges, but I'd say the most important was that what got a little lost that we had to find was that we were really selling to the innovator early adopters in the market. And those folks weren't necessarily counting on a commercial payer like Aetna to bring them this innovation. In many ways, they were expecting to find this on their own or through the benefit consulting community or through a very small cluster of innovation brokers out there. And so as we kind of realized that through our efforts, we decided to make a change and move to a real influencer selling strategy. So one, to not, you know, sell direct, but not sell cold, recognizing that this isn't a mass market opportunity yet. This is still just going after the innovator early adopters. And we wanted to make sure that we were really influencing those folks that were influencing them. And so that's really what led to our current sales approach, where we're incredibly rifle. We handpick our customers, and we go after exactly who we believe will be both attractive and good looking and the right fit for us. And so we've gone from something very wide to something very narrow. We also really focus on the deal economics, right? So, you know, what is the cost to acquire this client? What's the lifetime value of the client? Some of these, you know, are unheard of in early days when it's just raise a lot of money, spend on sales and marketing, you know, acquire a huge amount of clients, and then kind of hope the deal economics and the business model and the profitability model shows up. Where we've actually been really focused on getting all that right and making sure there's a business here that also happens to help deliver these outcomes that grow. And so all of that's been a fairly big focus of ours. To the second, the distribution lessons were major, but so too is the business model. Coming out of the randomized control trial, we felt that there was a real opportunity to actually align economic incentives in a way that just don't exist in sick care today, some of the biggest problems are misaligned incentives between, fee for service or value-based care and outcomes. And so we thought there was a great opportunity to create a pretty aggressive business model whereby we would align with both the interest of the participant and the interest of the insurer, whether employer or commercial payer, and make sure that either everyone wins or none of us win. And so that's something also that's been unique about Newtopia, whereby we go at risk for our fees based on engagement and outcomes. We literally have put our margin on the outcome side so that we are totally aligned. And that is pretty unique today. It's my hope that that's where the entire industry evolves, because there's no way of achieving a triple or quadruple aim on a fee-for-service or a capitated model whereby the incentive is actually either to see as many people as possible without delivering value, or to see no one and cross your fingers and hope no one shows up because you're getting paid irrespective. And it's ultimately aligning economic incentives that's going to be the key driver to achieving that triple aim in healthcare.
So what's really interesting here is you finally, when sort of like the penny drops and you found you probably have heard, people like Brian Halligan from HubSpot, and then, even Jeff Bezos within Amazon talk about the flywheel and your flywheel of people. And really the marketing funnel is not so much this, this funnel, it's really a flywheel that the more people who use it, it just goes faster and faster. And I think that Newtopia found themselves in that place, that as soon as you found that lock and key and you found the right formula, everybody was using this, you found the right business model and distribution model and sales model, and then suddenly it started going. Tell us a little bit about what that story was like when suddenly it was like, how did you need to start scaling en masse?
I would say, we've been incredibly fortunate to identify and partner with some of the leading innovators in the market, some of the largest, employers and insurers who are really looking for value upstream and are making, bets on, much like Aetna did years ago, on this new novel habit change platform of ours. But it's led to some pretty enormous population opportunities and also some fairly enormous experimenting where we're subject to some of the leading experiments taking place in the benefits world around how do you wrap the right incentives around a Newtopia platform to really maximize the behavioral economics and maximize the usage and uptake. And so we have seen some huge bursts in our participant platform and base, and it's definitely it's required both from the capital raising to the operationalizing to now through COVID, which has been a flip through what was much more than in person to a now entirely virtual organization. There have been massive tests, and I think it's the testament to an amazing team. I'm blessed with a lot of great things, but most blessed to just have found and really surrounded myself with this phenomenal team of passionate individuals who make this all work on a daily basis, and most importantly, stretch themselves to not being limited by what we've done before, but what can we do and how do we do it better? And so we're constantly looking to upend what we do and innovate, really disrupt ourselves over and over again. And so, I'd say it's that ethic that's been, those values that have been really, the key to that success and driving the ability to manage that flywheel.
So this actually brought you to a place of bringing the company public. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's been like and, your experiences in that process?
Raising capital for Newtopia has been really quite fascinating. We've tended to like the discipline of not having too much at any one time, because we believe that it really crispens the priorities when you're up against a wall and you don't have endless dollars to execute on. The sharpness of those decisions and the urgency of those priorities become much more tantamount, and so we like working under those conditions and have maintained them and continue to maintain them today, even as a newly public company. there was a I guess a decision made whereby, in our what would have been a classic B round in venture capital funding, we opted to move off the venture trail and move into the capital markets. And it was really a very strategic decision around the fact that I didn't believe that venture capital was the right asset class to fund the kind of growth that we at Newtopia are experiencing and are looking for. And I should just caveat that by saying there's nothing wrong with venture capital, but the rocket fuel concept of venture capital has to apply to a rocket. And in the area of disease prevention, where there's still a lot of wood to chop in the it's still an innovator early adopter market, how long it's going to take to cross the proverbial chasm to the mass market, where are providers going to play, where are pharma companies going to play, where are the mass market employers going to play is still unknown. That didn't feel like the right place for rocket fuel for us. And I just seen too many colleagues and friends take on huge rounds and get forced to change what made them great into something else to justify the money they brought on as opposed to the vision that they had originally. And it scared me that that would happen to us. And so the bet on the capital markets was, can we start telling this story about disease prevention, first and foremost, as opposed to sick care, about habit change, one size fits one, as opposed to one size fits all learning and education. And most importantly, these outcomes that grow for the benefit of the insurers, will we be able to build a strong enough, base of retail and institutional investors who buy in and see that as the future, as we do, and stay true to our habit change for disease prevention and healthy living roots, as opposed to forcing us to monetize our base and become something to everyone and inadvertently add to the bloat that's already there by doing so. That's the bet. We took a very unusual route in that we went public through a direct listing as opposed to an IPO. And so we wanted a very clean approach from effectively one day we were private, another day we were public. Without a lot of the marketing sizzle that comes with the IPO. Again, it was deliberate. It's made it more work for us because we've got to now introduce ourselves as a public company in a way that haven't before. So it's very consistent with the whole Newtopia story of experimenting and just believing in a course and a path and sticking to it and really believing that. This isn't incrementalism we're focused on. This is wholesale disruption and change. It takes time. We're patient. And most importantly, we just want to ensure that we keep delivering against that.
Beautiful. I love it. Great story. So again, because a big ecosystem that follows us and that we work with is really the life sciences, pharmaceutical, medical device companies. Some of them actually work in the obesity area. Other people, in a whole myriad of metabolic syndromes that they have medications for. Some of these companies are going to be reaching loss of exclusivity. Are you open or have you had these discussions of partnerships, of allowing or adding this particular app into their portfolio? And do you see the day where this becomes a digital therapeutic? What's the plan for that?
I do. So I believe very much that there's a bigger opportunity for Newtopia, which is how can we leverage our proven habit change platform? And it's proven, right? It's gold standard RCT. We've now been fully accredited by the CDC as an alternate diabetes prevention program. So there's no better imprimatur we can receive to date. But how do we leverage that proven habit change platform alongside precision medications that are in the pipeline or should be for lowering cholesterol, lowering blood pressure, lowering blood glucose. And it's our hope that we can also leverage this incredibly valuable data that we have, the genomic and phenotypic data, the anonymized, the identified level, to really bring our platform and that data to the conversation alongside with drug discovery and pharma to really hopefully usher in the next generation of preventive therapeutic platform. Effectively, how do you marry what we do with what they do? Because I think it's together that this becomes incredibly powerful. It's already, what we do is powerful, but combined becomes even more effective. And so that's the ultimate end. that Newtopia is striving for. And so our desire to enter into those partnerships and those conversations is very important, and we've begun doing so.
And what a fantastic thing to say and leave off with is this idea of a platform. As we know, some of the big five that are actually taking over the NASDAQ right now, the FANG, the Facebooks, and the, you know, Amazons, and all of those are platforms. What is the eventual view or vision of Newtopia as a platform? Who is going to be part of that platform, and what are going to be the various new components to that platform in the future?
I think, our immediate focus and hope is to really stay true to this opportunity to leverage the Habit Change platform to both prevent chronic disease and maximally keep people healthy. That's certainly where our focus is, but our IP, you know, our issued and outstanding patents and our intellectual property is really all about healthy habit change. And so the opportunity to leverage that further upstream to combine with the medical community around healthy habit change for individuals with chronic conditions, or potentially healthy habit change for individuals, you know, who are dealing with mental or behavioral issues, or even, you know, healthy aging, all become very much appropriate and very much possible. And so I'd say, you know, the aspiration for the platform today is, how do we own the prevention category and own the one size fits one habit change approach? And how do we do it around the world? But then also, how do we leverage our understanding of scaling habit change toward, you know, those other disciplines are all, you know, very much in our imagination, in our desire to, you know, fully execute on the platform and the vision of Newtopia.
I love it. And I love leaving this conversation with the word scaling, because I think one thing that Newtopia has shared with all startups, small businesses, entrepreneurs across the ecosystem worldwide is think big. Don't just look at your local economy. Realize that there's other niches and opportunities. And so always think big. So I think the scaling example of how you truly, Jeff, have taken a company and gone beyond just, you know, getting venture funding and selling, you truly are creating an operating company. So a great example for us. So thank you so much, Jeff, for the inspirational story. We certainly are going to keep our eyes open on Newtopia and all the fantastic successes that I'm sure we're going to see. For those of you who are attending or will be seeing this afterwards, we'll be sending links to our podcast and YouTube channel. Please be on the lookout for that. And we'll also be posting this on Twitter and our LinkedIn as well. Again, for those of you who don't know, we really believe in having and sharing these courageous conversations, because this is how healthcare is going to change. Healthcare thinking, getting away from sick care to well care, and really, truly into preventative management. And we want to have and house and bridge these conversations through the Impetus Insight platform, getting beyond the pill conversation into some of these big, hairy, audacious conversations. So thank you, Jeff.
Pleasure.
For this conversation. Thank you for attending, everybody, and we wish you a wonderful day ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Healthcare Goes Digital podcast. Impetus Digital are the business-to-business advisory board experts and provide virtual collaboration solutions for meetings, events, and projects worldwide. Visit us at impetusdigital.com to find out more and subscribe to our LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube to stay up to date about other upcoming inspiring conversations.